content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Joe Austin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Legal Matters. For the next half hour, we'll be exploring topics, and we want to help you champion your legal rights to obtain equal access and full participation in our community and to achieve your goals of independent living. And today's episode, our guest will be Iris Green. Hello, Iris.
Hi, Joe. How are you today?
Just fine. Iris is the Director of Constituent Services at Disability Rights NC. And may I say, this is a very propitious partnership today. We're very pleased to have Iris with us. Iris, why don't we start off, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, will do. And Joe, I want to say first, thank you for having me on Legal Matters today. I want to thank you and North Carolina Reading Services for the important work that you do in serving the blind and print impaired communities across North Carolina. But yes, I am the Director of Constituent Services at Disability Rights North Carolina. I joined the agency when it became the state's protection and advocacy agency in 2007. And at that time, my work focused on litigation on behalf of children eligible to receive services under the Medicaid Act and the Individuals with Disability Education Act, also known as IDEA. And so in 2019, I took on the challenge to lead the agency's emergency management and disaster relief efforts as the supervising attorney for the Disaster Displacement and Disability Project. And so in this role, I was able to add to my team two amazing advocates based in Eastern North Carolina who work with me to assist people with disabilities affected by Hurricane Florence and help them recover from that disaster. Recently, in October of 2020, I became the Director of Constituent Services. And in this new role, I am tasked with focusing on improving Disability Rights North Carolina client services and increasing services to underserved populations and hard-to-reach communities. So as part of my work to expand Disability Rights North Carolina community engagement efforts, I also lead both the disaster recovery efforts as well as the client assistance services and engagement team, also known as our intake team. So outside of work, I volunteer and I do community services with my local church, my sorority, and I'm also a part of a few community boards. Personally, I enjoy gardening, outdoor activities, experiencing with other cultures globally, and traveling back to my hometown in Timminsville, South Carolina, to visit with family members and friends. I received my bachelor's degree in political science from South Carolina State University and my law degree from North Carolina Central University School of Law here in Durham, North Carolina. I am married. I have two children, one daughter in love, and I have four adorable granddoggies. So that is who I am and what I do.
Fabulous. Well, we're so pleased to have you as our guest, and it is a mutual admiration society. We at North Carolina Reading Service have called upon attorneys from the Disability Rights NC on several occasions, and just always a wonderful program. So we're glad to have you with us.
Okay.
And, you know, we used to be the Triangle Radio Reading Service, but our scope is now statewide, and Disability Rights NC also has a statewide footprint, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. A little bit about who we are and our history. Disability Rights North Carolina, we are the protection and advocacy system in North Carolina, and we are dedicated to advancing the legal rights of all people with all types of disabilities of all ages statewide. And they are 57 protection and advocacy systems total. Every state as well as every U.S. territory has a protection and advocacy system. And so the 57 protection and advocacy systems comprise the National Disability Rights Network, and that National Disability Rights Network is located in Washington, D.C. Now, our history, it dates back to the 1970s when a TV reporter took a hidden camera into a school for children with disabilities in Staten Island, New York. And this facility was called Willowbrook. The parents thought that their children would get help and treatment when they placed their children in this facility. But the reporter's investigation, it told a much different story. The investigator showed footage of children that were crowded together in filth. Some didn't have clothes. They were neglected and abused. Some of the children had been intentionally infected with hepatitis. And Congressman Robert Kennedy said it best when he stated, and I quote, we have a situation that borders on a snake pit, unquote. And he said this after he visited the place in 1965. And so with this video and this investigation, the country was shocked by the conditions, the abuse and neglect that was uncovered during this investigation. And so after this story came out, the parents of the children, what they did was file a lawsuit against the state, and Congress passed the civil rights laws to protect people with disabilities after this investigation. They closed places like Willowbrook, and then they also created US, the Protection and Advocacy System, and incorporated the protection and advocacy for people with developmental disabilities to make sure that this type of abuse never happened again. And so Disability Rights, we are the PNA for North Carolina. What we do, we visit and we watch the places where people with disabilities live and work to make sure that they are safe and that they are treated very well. We have a very diverse staff. Virginia Knowlton Marcus, she joined us in September of 2018 as our chief executive officer. Over 70% of our 51 employees, they either have a disability or they have a close family member who has a disability. We have 20 plus attorneys as well as investigators. We have advocates, intake staff, and support staff. We also have an unwavering commitment to inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility, and a commitment to make Disability Rights North Carolina a more equitable organization. Now, all of our organization, we are led by a diverse board of directors, and they are passionate about the rights of people with disabilities. All or most of our board members are disabled, or they have a family member with a disability. And the Disability Rights North Carolina Board of Directors, they seek to reflect the ethnic, racial, geographic, and socioeconomic and disability diversity of North Carolina. So our board has 17 members representing the Western, Piedmont, and Central and Eastern parts of the state. Now, and also, I think I want to mention that in 1986, Congress took aim at abuse and neglect and other rights violations against people with mental health disabilities. And so as a result of this focus, they passed the Protection and Advocacy for Individuals with Mental Illness Act, also known as the PAMI Act. And the PAMI Act, what it does, it allows Disability Rights North Carolina to investigate an abuse and neglect against people with mental health disabilities and to advocate for their legal rights. And so the PAMI Act requires each PNA to maintain and work with the Protection and Advocacy for People with Mental Illness Advisory Council, also known as the PACS. And so what the PACS do, they advise the PNAs on policies and priorities that need to be carried out in protecting and advocating for the rights of individuals with mental illness. So this is who we are in a nutshell, and this is what we do.
Well, the list of services is very impressive, and the website is a wonderful website. It is a resource unto itself. But suppose we have a listener who has an issue that he or she thinks that she would like to consult with you all. How would they go about getting in touch with Disability Rights North Carolina?
Joe, what we try to do, we try to make sure that as much of our services are placed on the website. We have an online intake via our website, or they can actually call us. So I would encourage everyone who is listening to visit our website for more information about our work, the issues we are working on, and for self-advocacy materials, referral resources. We want to remain connected and relevant and responsive to the disability community statewide. And so listeners can go to our website at www.disabilityrightsncfornorthcarolina.org, or they can call us at 919-856-2195. Our toll-free number is 1-877-235-4210. And TTY users can reach us by calling 1-888-268-5535.
So we could call you or email you or any number of ways to get in touch. And And so the range of services that would be available to a person, what would the and not necessarily the distinct areas of law, but what do you actually do for people? I'm sure sometimes you file lawsuits.
Yeah, we do. As a protection and advocacy system, our responsibilities include ensuring that people with disabilities live in safe and humane conditions. So that is our first and foremost thing that we do to try to make sure that people are safe and that they are living in humane conditions. We also ensure that people with disabilities are not unnecessarily institutionalized. And so we want to make sure that people have the supports and services that they need to be able to live in their homes and in their communities. We also advance the rights of all North Carolinians with disabilities under federal and state law. So if there's a law out there that protects their rights and those laws are being violated, we work to help them with that. And we also inform individuals about their legal rights and how they can go about enforcing them. So we have many tools that we use to carry out our mission, which is to advance and defend the rights of people with disabilities. And we do this through a number of ways. The first way that we do it is through our monitoring and investigation. The initial and central mission of the PNA system was and is to prevent the abuse and neglect of individuals with disabilities, particularly those who live in institutions or other facilities. We do not want the things that happened in Willowbrook to happen again. Our goal is to ensure that residents' rights are protected and that they are living in a safe environment with opportunities to participate in activities important to them. And so during our monitoring, we identified individuals who could live in the community if they had the proper supports and services, and we work to try to get them into the community. We also provide information and referral services. So all of our calls and emails for assistance are handled by our intake team, also known as our client assistance services and engagement team. And what they do, they conduct in-depth interviews with our clients to determine if the caller's needs falls within our current priority work. And right now what we do, we categorize our current work into targets. We also try to work on litigation that is systemic. So as a protection and advocacy agency, our work focuses on addressing disability-related issues that have the greatest impact for the disability community. Another tool that we use and we use often is we have a public policy team. We work with allies and we educate public policymakers about the effect of public policies on people with disabilities. Now, one example of our public policy work was securing a law that keeps children with disabilities out of the adult criminal system. And so as of December 1st, 2019, 16 and 17-year-olds charged with misdemeanors or low-level felonies will go through the juvenile justice system rather than our adult system. And so children with disabilities are much more likely to face criminal charges than their non-disabled peers. And what this law does is protect these children from the many collateral consequences of an adult criminal conviction and gives them access to the services and programs that they need to put themselves on a better life path. Another example of our public policy work is ensuring that children in psychiatric residential treatment facilities can get an education. And so what we did with that, we worked to secure a change to the law that established the licensing guidelines for these facilities. So now children who are in psychiatric residential treatment facilities that serve children, they must have a school on site. And so these children now have access to school when they're in that setting. And the last public policy example that I'm going to share is that we worked on was preventing dangerous changes to the state's Medicaid program for children with significant medical needs, known as CAPC. We assisted parents of the children in that program with their advocacy efforts, and we partnered with the other advocacy organizations to educate policymakers about the damaging effects the proposed changes would have on these children. And so when we worked with the state policymakers, we crafted better policies for this group of children. At Disability Rights North Carolina, I want to mention that we also have what you call a representative payee review team. And so this came about on April 13th of 2018. And on 2018, the president, he signed the Strengthening Protections for Social Security Act. And what this law does, it directs protection and advocacy system organizations to conduct periodic on-site reviews along with additional discretionary reviews In addition, they protect and advocacy systems. They conduct educational visits, and they conduct reviews based on allegations that they receive of a payee misconduct. And so with these reviews, what our goal is to try to protect people with disabilities from financial exploitation, abuse, and neglect. And so if a representative payee is found to be mishandling benefits on behalf of a person with a disability, the PNA, we work with the payee on a corrective action plan with the Social Security Administration's advanced approval of that plan. And the Social Security Administration, they also will do their ongoing follow-up in a more significant instances, whether that might be removing the payee or referring that payee for prosecution. So this is the range of services that we provide to the disability community and some of the things that we've been working on.
Very important question. What is the cost?
There is no cost for our services. All of our services are free. And unlike legal aid, where they have a financial requirement to be able to receive services, we do not have that financial requirement. And so all of our services are free, and it does not matter what what your income is, but we do try to again work on those things that are systemic and those things that will have the greatest impact on the disability community as a whole.
Well, I can say from personal experience, as an attorney for a business, that I've actually had a case with one of your lawyers in years gone by, and it had to do with a service animal in a place in a public business, and we were able to get it worked out, and just a very lovely person, and on the other side, you're the attorney who I don't think she's there anymore, but but that's one of the legal areas that I know for a fact you all help people with. And voting rights. I know you've got you work on voting rights as well.
Yeah, we have. We believe it or not, even during the pandemic, we've been working and making great strides with our work. And so we have uncovered disability discrimination law enforcement. So in January, we were able to settle a discrimination complaint that was filed by a police officer who was forced to undergo an illegal medical examination to maintain her job. Our client was also a United States veteran. She served as a police officer for 15 years before the institution learned that she received mental health compensation from the Veterans Administration. So despite her high performance mark, she was immediately placed on administrative leave and threatened with the termination unless she submitted to and passed a mental fitness examination. And so we were able to settle that case. So in addition to paying the $110,000 of settlement, the institution agreed to review its medical examination and inquiry policies to ensure that they comply with the ADA. And so these, the ADA is the American with Disabilities Act. And so these policies affect thousands of people in several states, including law enforcement officers. In another law enforcement case, it involved a utility vest with an officer with the police department, and was placed, our client was placed on administrative leave and almost terminated because he carried police equipment on a vest instead of on his belt. So he wore this vest because of a degenerative back condition that had worsened by years of wearing the duty belt by the police officer. But ultimately, the police department, they promoted him to a position that didn't require him to wear a duty belt in order to resolve the discrimination complaint. And it wasn't the result that we were seeking. But I think the attorney that worked on that case, he said it best. And I quote, he said, "There are necessary protocols and rules that need to be followed in law enforcement. But there are also trivial rules like wearing a belt instead of a vest to carry equipment." So discrimination arises when departments cling to non-vital practices over the welfare of their officers with disabilities. So even in this case, while the result was positive for our client, the police department worked around needing to make accommodations for its duty belt rule by promoting him to a new position, unquote. And so we resolved the case, but the issue may be ongoing for other people that may have that same issue. We also, I want to share, we also filed a complaint and settled a case in December of 2020 against the UNC healthcare system for systematically discriminating against blind people by failing to provide them with written information in formats they can access, such as large print braille or accessible electronic formats. Our client was unable to participate in his health care and to make timely payments on his medical bills. And so we are, parts of that case is still ongoing, but our client now receives communication in accessible format and his debt, which he did not know he had because he was not able to access the information when he was receiving the bills in inaccessible format, that debt has been forgiven. And so that was a positive outcome for our client. And again, some parts of the case is still ongoing. Another one that I want to mention, a case that we worked on, was the medical rationing protections for people with disabilities during this pandemic. And so when COVID, I want to explain first what medical rationing is. So when COVID-19 pandemic first arrived in the United States, many hospitals and hotspot areas were overwhelmed. And so when there are not enough resources for people, hospital staff, they face the impossible job of trying to decide who will get life-saving care and who will not get life-saving care. And so this is what is called medical rationing. And so with the Department of Health and Human Services, Disability Rights Program, we filed a complaint with them to try to resolve this complaint, because what we did, we found out that North Carolina did not have a plan in place to be able to address this. They were working on a plan, but that plan had been abandoned. We reached out to them on several occasions to try to resolve the situation. And when we were not able to resolve it, we filed a complaint with the Department of Health and Human Services Office for Civil Rights, along with the ARC of North Carolina. And what we did, we alleged a North Carolina scarce medical resource plan illegally deprioritized people with disabilities and allocation of this life-saving care. And so Disability Rights North Carolina and the ARC, we were joined by the Coalition of National Disability Rights Advocates, who filed more than a dozen of such complaints since the pandemic has began. And so in response to the complaint, an engagement with the Office for Civil Rights, North Carolina has agreed and has revised its protocol for allocating scarce inpatient critical care resources in the pandemic to comply with the federal disability rights laws to ensure that people with disabilities will not encounter discrimination, even when public health emergencies such as the pandemic necessitate the ration of medical resources. And so we were excited about that. You mentioned earlier, Joe, about the voting work that we did during the pandemic, and I want to share a little bit about that as well. So on July 27, 2020, Disability Rights Advocates, along with Disability Rights North Carolina, we filed a lawsuit against the North Carolina Board of Elections for excluding North Carolinians with disabilities from their absentee voting program. And with this lawsuit charged, the North Carolina State Board of Elections with discrimination against voters who were unable to independently and privately mark a paper ballot due to vision disabilities. And so this lawsuit was filed in the Eastern District of North Carolina under Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act and Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act. And so rather than monetary damages, we sought to reform the systems and practices that discriminate against voters with disabilities. So on September 25th, 2020, the United States District Court for the Eastern District of North Carolina, they granted a motion for preliminary injunction against the North Carolina State Board of Elections, and they ordered them to make their absentee voting program accessible to voters with disabilities by the past November election. And so that was a big win for us. The order also found that the North Carolina Board of Elections was in violations of Title II of the ADA and Section 504. And Chief District Judge Terrence Bowles ordered that the North Carolina State Board of Elections to allow voters with vision disabilities to opt into the already accessible electronic platform that is used by the military for overseas voters. And so this includes accessible electronic means for requesting, receiving, marking, and returning absentee ballots. And so this ruling, it affirms that all North Carolinians deserve deserve to vote privately and independently from their home during this COVID crisis that we're continuing to go through.
Well,
and so those are, a few of the major things that we've done so far during the pandemic.
Wonderful results. Well done. What a wonderful service this is. Iris, we are not necessarily running out of time, but we're running a little short on time. I'm going to remind our listeners of how to get in touch with Disability Rights North Carolina. The website is www.disabilityrightsnc.org. Local telephone number is 919-856-2195. Toll free is 877-235-4210. And Iris, you've obviously will resort to the adversarial process when it's necessary and the collaborative process when you can. I was very impressed with the materials that you had online, and I, for one, am very prejudiced in favor of having a lawyer for legal issues. Mm-hmm. But you also had some self-help materials in the online. I was particularly impressed under the Americans with Disabilities Act. You've got some form letters for people to use to get accommodations.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You've worked very hard on those, haven't you?
Yeah, we have. And because we're a statewide program and because there's so many people that are in need, especially during this pandemic, and we're trying to make sure that we are very resourceful and make sure that people have what they're needing to be able to do what they need to do. And of course, because our staff is so small, we can't do everything for everybody. But we want to make sure that we have other things out there that people, some self-help materials that people can use to be able to advocate for themselves. And so, yes, we're working very hard to try to get as many examples, many samples. And so if the public have information about things that they're needing, please contact us and let us know. And we'll work to try to make sure that we put those resources on our website and have them available for people. So we do need to hear from the public about what you need and what is helpful. And we do it. We're on Facebook. We're on different social media platforms. And so if you're there, to look us up on those platforms and like us and just share with us what it is that you're needing, what you're wanting, and things that are helpful that we place on our website that are helpful. Let us know that as well. And then we are committed to try to working with the public and trying to work with the disability community in North Carolina.
Well, I think I'm a fairly sophisticated consumer of this sort of information and a user as well. And I will tell our listeners that what you've got online is first class.
Well, Iris, thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you for being our guest today. And I think we'll have you back or maybe some of your colleagues at some point.
Absolutely. I think they would love that. Mm-hmm. Well, we have a lot of specialty work that we do, and then I'm sure they would love to share with the listeners some of the special, the more specific, some of the work that we're doing at Disability Rights North Carolina. Well, so thank you for the invite today.
Well, let's count on it. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Legal Matters. Please be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed the show and discovered information to help you with your legal rights to obtain equal access and full participation in our community. I'm Joe Austin for the North Carolina Reading Service. Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Legal Matters is available as a podcast at our website, www.ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service